Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good. And you're paralyzed with greed. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard, and happy November, everybody. Did you get out there and get your I voted sticker? Did you do the right thing out there? Did you err on the side of compassion when you cast your ballot? I hope so. That's really the best you can hope for out of anybody. When you're thinking about making a decision that's going to affect more people than you, you really got to think about the big picture. Who is this going to help? And is this going to help people who need it? And am I being compassionate with my actions? That's really the best that you can hope for as a human being at literally any time, whether you're voting or whether you're just out there in the world interacting with other people. Compassion is the way forward. I know that can be tricky to walk the tightrope of self-protection and being open to other people. But with a little effort, I think we can all get there. I hope we can all get there. Some days are a little darker than others for me. But I have enough good people in my life that I'm reminded that things are not always as bad as they seem. Sometimes they are, but not always. Speaking of good people, today on the show, we have got Lola Marie, the singer for the band Rotten Reputation, from out of right here in Denver, Colorado. And I do say that with a little bit of hesitation, and throughout the course of the conversation, you'll understand why. Because Lola Marie doesn't sing for Rotten Reputation. Someone else does. And throughout the course of the conversation that we get into about borderline personality disorder, we kind of touch on some things together. And I want to make clear a distinction up top at the beginning, before we get into it in the conversation, because after listening back to it, I feel like there is an opportunity to be misunderstood. And maybe I wasn't as sensitive as I should have been in the moment, and so this is an attempt at correction. I do understand that there's a difference between a person making decisions on how they're going to address their personal trauma, and that sometimes the trauma makes the decision about how a person is going to address that trauma. In my instance, I made some decisions on how I was going to address my social anxiety, my fear, and the trauma of my past. I'd made some decisions how I was going to do that. And today's guest did not. This was something that arose. And there is quite a difference between putting on a persona and having a persona put you on. And so I just wanted to say up top that I do recognize that there is a difference. Now, that said, we still have a wonderful conversation. It does have lots of peaks and valleys. We laugh a lot, but we also do get into some pretty heavy stuff. So if you're sensitive to that, just be aware. But without further ado, I give you my conversation with Lola Marie.
Thank you. Well, that's good. At least it was saved.
Yeah, exactly. That's what comes from lots of time working with garbage and then getting better equipment, and it's still garbage.
Yeah. Everything's garbage nowadays, let's be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. The whole insanity that is happening right now is difficult for me to wrap my head around. And one of the things that I was struck by, especially with regards to the EP that you guys just put out, was in the first song, the whole allegory of, she's a witch.
Yes.
That is still way more relevant than it has any business being.
That's what I loved about writing that song. I wrote that song about a real witch in Salem, Massachusetts. Uh-huh. She was the first witch that was hung. Her name is Bridget Bishop. Mm-hmm. First witch that was hung for witchcraft in Salem. And when you go through the Salem Museum at the end, I don't remember exactly what it was that was said, but they give you this big timeline of all these historic events of these horrible, horrible things that have happened, mm-hmm. witch trials being one of them, and then also the Holocaust being another one, and the Japanese in the U.S. being another one, and just talking about all these different camps and things like that, and all these horrible things that have happened to people throughout the year. And they turn to the audience and they say, "Do you recognize that this is happening now in our country?" And everybody goes silent, and I immediately was like, yes. And everybody was just so shocked that the tour guide would say such a thing, because they're like, oh, no, that can't be. And she would point out all these different things that are mirroring not just the witch trials, but also the Holocaust and also yeah. the Japanese camps and all these other tragedies that have happened. And so when I wrote that song, I was thinking about not just the witch trials, but how much it does relate to our current situation.
It's really gotten crazy. I was talking to my wife about this morning. I think that when it all shakes out, I don't think he's going to leave.
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of that. There's always a way to make somebody leave.
There is. That's true.
We just gotta make it happen. However that is that you think. Leave that up to you.
Right. Yeah. I'm just gonna set these things down on the table.
Yep.
And maybe pick one.
Yep. That's the plan.
That's as good a plan as anything I've heard so far. So, tell me a little bit about, let's back up. When did you first get into music?
Well, that's an odd question, because I actually am probably the worst musician out there when it comes to, history of music and being into music, because a lot of the times I found myself living a lot in silence and not really finding music, and I would cling to pretty much one thing or one artist and only listen to that on repeat.
Yeah.
Miley Cyrus is my vice, which is strange to a lot of people because I make punk rock music.
Yeah.
So it's actually not until recently where I really have been sitting down on Spotify and just searching and searching and searching and searching and finding all these artists that I'm very much into, and I'm like, oh, this is what I've been missing from my life.
Yeah.
But music is strange because it's been with me but also hasn't been with me. I usually would go towards music whenever I was sad, mm-hmm. And needed a place to vent. And a lot of that happened throughout school. But as I became an adult, I kind of just listened to what everybody else was listening to. If I was hanging out in somebody's car, I'd be like, oh, yeah, you put on your iPod. And I enjoyed it. I enjoy all types of music. I'm the kind of person that's like, I enjoy all music. Yes, even country and rap.
Yeah.
I do. But trying to develop my own flavor has been a rather recent thing for me. And I found that Riot Girl bands is my thing. Go figure. it's been actually a very recent discovery for me of finding my music, and that's also helped me with writing as well and being an artist.
The thing that I always liked when I discovered punk rock, Because I was doing the same thing. I was listening to whatever was on the radio. Mm-hmm. That was what there was.
Yeah.
I didn't even know there were options.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
For me, it was two things went hand in hand. A kid in the neighborhood put up a skateboard ramp. And at the skate ramp, you could bring your own music when it was your turn to skate.
That is
skateboarders
awesome.
Have very eclectic tastes in music. And so that was the first time I'd ever heard anything that wasn't radio metal or, you know, Poison or whatever.
Yeah.
It was so, I mean, all of a sudden my mind was just blown. Like, oh, you can just do that.
Yeah.
You can just do whatever. I had drums kicking around at my house, but I never played them. And so, I mean, immediately it was like I could, you know, I heard the Ramones and it was like, oh, I could do that.
Yeah.
Like, this is a thing I could do. And the thing I loved about it was the speed, the immediacy,
mm-hmm.
The fact that it was kind of odd, kind of different, kind of doing its own thing. And that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah, that's actually how I felt about when I discovered a band called Sailor Poon.
Yeah.
They're from Austin, Texas. And I've never really heard anything. That was like the first like riot girl band that I've heard.
Yeah.
And it was like nothing I've ever heard before because it was so raw. It almost seemed like they went in the recording studio and they just didn't care. They're like, we're going to do whatever the fuck we want. And we don't give a shit.
Right.
And they just went off and recorded this album that's all about basically being a woman in the U.S. And it's insane and it's awesome and it just feels like they did it in one take and mm-hmm. they were like, cool, done. And I love it.
Yeah.
It's punk rock as fuck.
Yeah. The thing that I found interesting about getting involved in the punk rock community was that it simultaneously saved my life
mm-hmm.
and put me in more danger.
Yes. I
Which is a really
agree.
Weird dichotomy. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what was your experience the first time you decided I'm going to get a sideways haircut? you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I've always been a rebellious type.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't necessarily a good kid, but I also wasn't necessarily a bad kid.
Yeah.
But I definitely was a kid that didn't want to be like everybody else. So the first haircut that I actually had was I shaved one half of my head. And then had the other half of my head very long.
Yeah.
And then I colored the short half red and then the under part of the long hair red. And ever since then, I've never stopped dyeing my hair. I haven't seen my virgin hair since I was like 15 or 16. And it's always been like that, just trying to maintain just a look of like, I don't want to be like anybody else. I don't want to blend in. I want to stand out. I want to do my own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Was that your question? I feel like I went a roundabout way of saying
it
that.
It was in the neighborhood.
Okay, cool.
So, what are your folks like?
I have a very, very rocky relationship with my family. Oh, wow. I just got emotional. I did not expect that to happen. I have a very rocky relationship with my parents. Sorry. Ooh. I haven't really talked about this recently. So this is all coming up.
It's all right.
So my parents weren't bad parents, but they definitely did some things that weren't okay, especially through growing up, and especially with somebody who deals with not only, this is going to get heavy real quick, so I hope you're ready. All through, yep, thank you. Yes, tissues, please. All through growing up, I experienced a lot of relationship abuse, a lot of that including a lot of emotional and physical abuse, and my parents never understood that. And so I developed a lot of mental health issues that they did not understand, and that clashed a lot, and no matter how much as I grew up and started to recognize it more, they never accepted it. They'd call me crazy. They'd be like, oh, you're being too sensitive. Oh, you need to man up, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
So recently, in the past few years, actually, I've kicked them out of my life and brought them back in and kicked them out and brought them back in because I do love them. I do care about them. They're my parents.
Yeah.
So what I did a couple years back was I wrote out a basically like a bullet point essay of all the things that they did throughout my childhood to kind of bring it up to them and be like, hey, this is why it's really hard for me to be around you. This is why I get really sensitive about certain things when you bring it up. I'm going to put it all in one book, basically. It's going to suck to talk about, but let's talk about it so we can move on. And they basically took that and threw it away and are like, we don't want to deal with this. This is too hard for us, which is understandable. But that's basically them taking my feelings and throwing them away.
Yeah.
So I did go to a therapist with them. We did try that for a little while. They didn't seem to be interested in really fixing that. So I pushed it behind me. And I was like, okay, let me just try to start from new. And I hung out with them again, and some things were still coming up, and I would try to bring it up to them, and they'd lash out at me, get mad at me, or just wouldn't understand me when I was trying to explain what was going on. So I brought up, like, well, if you read the book or the little essay thing that I wrote to you, you would know why I act this way. And if you listened to me, then we could have figured this out. And they're like, oh, well, okay, we'll listen to it now. And I'm like, no. Now that it's a convenience to you, we're not going to do it, because that still shows that you don't actually care about how I feel. Because the moment I brought it up, you didn't want to talk about it. But now that you want to talk about it, suddenly it's important again.
Yeah.
So recently, again, I've pushed them out of my life. I'm actually currently at a point where I'm debating, should I see them on Thanksgiving or should I let the holidays pass? Because I still love them.
Yeah.
I still would love to see them. I would still love to have a relationship with my parents, but they make it difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that the option that's before you is one of the ways that you could do that is it falls on your shoulders, whether that's fair or unfair, to make some decisions about what is important to you. And just as they can be selfish about choosing to hear you when they want to resolve things for themselves, you can also find that within yourself to say, I want a relationship with these people, but I want to do it on my own terms.
Exactly.
And just have your lines in the sand where you know what you're going to accept and what you're not going to accept. And don't deviate from that.
It's hard.
It is hard. And it's also hard to stifle the history that can bring everything up. It's hard to stifle the anger. It's hard to find that within yourself to be willing to take all of those things that are completely glued to these people and to yourself and just throw it away. Because it's something that's so big and so much a part of you. You know, it's like having a tumor inside your body. and you're the surgeon that has to either cut it out or figure out how to live with it.
Yep.
But what do you do with that?
I don't know. And like that's exactly where I am in the world. It's very hard figuring out what to do with that tumor.
Yeah.
Literally days ago, I got a package from my parents. And like I said, I haven't talked to them in, it's been a few months now.
Yeah.
So I haven't talked to them for a while. And it was a box full of Halloween candy. And they're like, we know it's your favorite holiday. We wanted to send you Halloween candy. It was all chocolate, and I'm vegan. And I couldn't tell what kind of message they were trying to send with that.
Right.
And either way, it still felt like they didn't actually think about me when they were doing it. They were thinking more about how they felt sending it. They're like, oh, I would like it. It makes me feel good to send her this, so I'm going to. But they didn't take the time to think of how it's going to be received on my end.
Sure.
And that this is the barrier that I'm at with them, where it's like, I know you guys are trying to be nice, but it doesn't really come off as nice when you don't actually think about me in the end game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's currently where I am with them right now.
I think parents have a tendency to fall into that pattern of owner and protector. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And almost treat their children the way that you would treat a slave, honestly.
To an extent, yeah.
To an extent, mm-hmm. because, and I guess what I mean by that, I don't mean to get hyperbolic.
Yeah.
But the idea being, you know, I brought you into this world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I created you. It's a, mm-hmm. it's almost a godlike relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I created you, and therefore I should have some say in what's happening with you at all times.
Yes.
And so this idea that they're sending you Halloween candy that you can't eat.
It is hilarious, to be honest.
It's really difficult. I mean, just hearing it, it's difficult to tell if it's making an effort or giving you the finger. You know, trying to exude some more control over mm-hmm. your situation, even from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to tell. I don't envy you.
Yeah. So I'm just kind of stuck here. I actually had to see my dad the other day to get him off of my bank account, because mm-hmm. he was a joint owner of my bank account, because we opened it when I was really, really young.
Yeah.
So he asked me, he's like, oh, did you get that package we sent you? And I was like, yeah. I'm very confused of what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, we know it's your favorite holiday. And he just looked very dumbfounded, and I was like, well, I'm vegan. And he goes, oh, all right, I forgot. I'm just like, okay, I don't know how I feel about this. So I'm still, like, processing those feelings currently of, like, why'd you forget? That's a little weird.
Yeah.
If you took the time to go to the store, to buy the things, to package it up, to send it out, you didn't take the time to think, I don't know.
Family
I'm talking in a circle
strange.
At this point, but this well, is what I'm currently going through.
Yeah, there's an intellectual puzzle that's
yep.
just wrapping itself around your brain and rattling around, and until it's solved, what do you do with it?
Well, and there's always, of course, the I'm probably overthinking it, mm-hmm. which is often for me.
Yeah.
And the high paranoia of just like, they have to be out to get me. That's the only reason. It has to be that. So processing that and figuring out what is the factual truth of what they're thinking versus what my brain is making me think they're thinking.
Yeah.
Constant battle.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
Nope.
So you're the only one.
Yes.
Yeah, that's got to make that rough. You don't even have other people as a buffer.
No. I just have to go off of what I remember and what my friends remember growing up, which is tough. But the reason I'm an only child, I don't think I was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I was born with several different heart defects, and I went through several different surgeries. And my parents were like, can't do that anymore. This is a lot to deal with, which is totally understandable.
Yeah.
So I think that's pretty much why I'm an only child, or else maybe there might have been another sibling, but they had to go through a lot with me.
Yeah. You know, I wonder if that has anything to do with their inability to let go.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I think there's definitely, and this might come out a little bit wrong, I think there's definitely like a I owe them something kind of complex that they have, since
yeah.
I did go through all those surgeries, and they, of course, went through super tough times with that. I couldn't have done that with my own kids if I were to have any.
Yeah.
It sounds horrible. So I understand this complex of, well, you owe us now, but I was there too.
Yeah.
Like, I went through it. So I don't know. I'm very much a person on, if you don't treat me as an equal, I don't want you in my life.
Yeah.
So if you ever treat me in a way that is above me, I'm gonna try to fight you back down. And that's how a lot of our conversations end up, is very much like, they're the parent and I'm the kid. And I'm like, no. We're both adults now.
Right.
Let's talk to each other eye to eye.
Yeah. That's a hard thing for people to swallow sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But in regards to everything that that happened, the complicated home life, and things like that. When was the first time that you discovered that, something was off with you? Like, not just normal, hey, here's sadness, because external thing happened, but hey, here's something that I can't get rid of and I didn't ask for it. Where is this coming from?
Well, it really depends on what category of life, because with growing up with heart disease and heart surgery and having a pacemaker all my life, I was definitely always the oddball out because I can't go through security. So if we'd go through field trips or things like that with school, I had to always get taken out, brought around. I couldn't go through metal detectors or anything like that. I can't do that on the plane. I can't go through TSA. It's a whole thing. So it's like from the get-go, I was already like, well, I'm different.
Yeah.
But as I grew up in different categories of life, I was definitely different. Probably the moment that I really started to notice, like, I'm not like everybody else is middle school. And I feel like that's when everybody starts to develop that, because you start to develop your personality. And that's also when a lot of trauma started to happen. So, yay. Character growth.
Yeah,
pretty much. I think middle school would be right where that sweet spot is.
you talk about trauma. Like, as if the heart surgery stuff wasn't enough. what else was going on?
Lots of different things. A lot of it was pretty much starting in middle school. I was basically a serial monogamist until, like, as of 3 months ago. Rather recently. And I've been in relationship after relationship after relationship with men. In the beginning. So a lot of that ended up with the toxic masculinity in our world and the way that a lot of our men are raised and a lot of the way women are raised, or rather femme-presenting people and masculine-presenting people at a young age are raised, is very toxic towards each other.
Yeah.
And I, being... I don't know how to really phrase this. Basically, to kind of say it really raw, is I was assaulted many times starting from middle school from then on throughout many of the relationships that I had, both emotionally and physically. And dealing with a lot of that has developed a lot of mental problems that I have, and a lot of that comes out not necessarily in my music. Well, no, definitely. Definitely my music, because in our recent album, Castration Station, there's a song called Chronicles of Tragedy.
I was going to ask you about that,
yes.
As a matter of fact.
And that's basically the most emotional song I've ever wrote. Because I don't write personal songs. Well, okay, let me... There's layers to this. Let me start. So I have multiple personalities. Through this trauma, I've developed two other people at least.
Yeah.
I'm discovering that there might be more, but they've never gotten the attention. So since being single, I've decided, like, I'm going to really focus on this and try to figure myself out. But from what I know currently, there's Stephanie. She's like 25, 26, redhead, very tall, lesbian, hates men, just the meanest person ever, but like a firecracker. She writes Rotten Reputation songs. She is Rotten Reputation. And a lot of people will tell me, well, you're very different on stage. Because I'll go on stage and I let Stephanie take over.
Yes.
And that's how I've been able to deal with having her. Because she's the one that really tries to push out and kind of ruin my life. Which she has done successfully a few times. Thank you very much. But I've given her Rotten Reputation as her outlet to kind of keep her at bay, basically, to kind of and be able to deal with it myself. So that's why a lot of people talk to me, specifically with the Nancy album. That's 100% her.
Yeah.
People are like, you're very different than the songs that you write about. Like, some of the songs you write about are really mean. Like, Why are you talking about stealing other people's women and, you know, doing all these different things that, like, I'm definitely against, and trying to explain, like, well, it's not me that's talking about this. This is somebody else's thoughts.
Yeah.
It's a very hard conversation to have casually at the merch table.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a very similar experience. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've gone into this on the show at all. So I guess
let's
here
break
we
it
go.
Open.
So I had some sexual trauma when I was a kid that continued into my teenage years and then even into my adult years, and also physical trauma from, you know, getting beat up because I was weird looking. You know, it's I think it's different for boys in some ways. You know, as you say, masculine presenting people, toxic masculinity for sure. Those kind of things can ruin your interpersonal relationships with other human beings, because it starts throwing wrenches into the works of how the interpersonal communication between two human beings works.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things I had to discover about myself was, while I saw myself presenting as maybe more of a feminine male, certainly a feminist,
mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that in a lot of ways that toxic masculinity within me was presenting itself as white knight syndrome a lot of the time. And so I had this thing where I wasn't seeing women as equals.
Mm-hmm.
I was seeing them as on pedestals.
Oh.
Right. And so,
which is a very different form. Yeah.
Right. And then the people I would get involved with were people who also had damage.
Mm-hmm.
And my whole thing was, I can fix that.
Mm-hmm.
Which that's not a good place to be for either of you. Because it's almost
that's
a position of power. Again,
yeah.
Like, I can save you.
And I think that's very common with a lot of people that do have mental health issues. I don't like to say issues because it's,
sure.
It's not for some people.
Yeah.
But I think that does happen with a lot of people that they're like, oh, I can help, because they don't want them to experience what they're going through
yeah.
in their daily life. Yeah.
But you can really do some damage if you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
But to go back to your point of having this other personality
mm-hmm.
that's able to do these things,
mm-hmm.
I had pretty severe social anxiety with other people. And the way I got through it was by creating another character that I could play when I would go out in public.
Mm-hmm. Putting on that mask in the morning.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So for years and years, I was this other guy
mm-hmm.
that was, you know, dry wit and sardonic and, you know, all these things and just confident,
mm-hmm.
which I am really not. So for years and years, I put that on, and I would tell people all the time, like, you know, you didn't meet me.
Mm-hmm.
You met this version of me. You met this avatar that I sent out into the world while I sat in the back of the room and watched the meat puppet walk around.
Yeah.
You know,
I totally get what you mean.
Exactly. And there is a multiple personality thing about it, because there are, like, have you ever said things out loud and are surprised when you hear them?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, constantly. Well, and with what you were just saying, something that I struggle with is not recognizing when I'm putting on a mask.
Yeah.
I will have a different mask for every person that I talk to.
Mm-hmm.
I have a mask just talking to you.
Yeah.
And I'll have a different mask when I go home and see my roommates, and a different mask when I go out on a date, and a different mask when I go to a show.
Yeah.
And I'm constantly bouncing through these without being able to take them off. just adapting to that situation and dealing with it.
Sure.
And I think one of it definitely has to do with the BPD, borderline personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And the other of it has to do with trauma and survival.
Yes.
And being able to recognize a situation and going, okay, this is how I should act. And then that mask goes on. But and this is what I'm currently working on as well, is trying to find who am I and who is fake.
Yeah.
Who's the real me and who is the fake me that I put out to everybody else? And trying to figure that out has been quite the roller coaster.
Well, I mean, any human being who thinks that their personality isn't a series of defense mechanisms is fooling themselves.
Exactly, exactly.
I mean, that's all it is, a personality. Mm-hmm. It's defending yourself against the first time somebody told you no.
Mm-hmm.
You start building up the areas where you think you need protection.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that protection is laughing or smiling or eye contact or, you know what I mean? Like every little aspect of human behavior between two human beings mm-hmm. is calculated after a certain point because
oh, yeah.
you learn this is what I have to do to get through this, especially mm-hmm. if you're a person who's experienced violence,
yes.
whether it be physical violence or sexual violence. If you've experienced violence from another human being without really knowing where it came from,
mm-hmm.
that opens the whole world as chaos.
Yeah.
That could happen anytime, anywhere, from anyone, especially if, and the odds are good, that something like that happened from someone you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't understand how anyone cannot have empathy for the fact that there are so many people out there experiencing these things mm-hmm. and then wonder why there's so much anger and frustration. It's like people aren't listening.
I totally relate to this. Because this is something that I talk about all the time, is I have like a mission in life to get specifically white cis straight boys to understand not just sexism, but also the racism and the internalized transphobia that they bear with them every day, whether it's quote-unquote their fault or not, based on how
sure.
they're raised or how they chose to live their life. And that's something that I'm constantly on the internet yelling at people about, basically. Constantly posting things that are just like, let's see how that goes. Let's see who responds to this. Let's
yeah.
see who we can talk to today. And a lot of people, especially on my like Facebook social media, have kind of gathered that from me. And we'll see when somebody comments something, they'll get in there and they'll be like, okay, no, let me tell you, as a person who understands or as a person who currently lives with this, this is why you're wrong. And no, it's not the best way to go about it.
Yeah.
I will admit that. But there has been a few times where people have come up to me and they're like, you yelled at me a while back about something and it stuck in my head and now I realize that I was wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry. And I'm like, okay, that's all I want, even if it's just one person, just to come up and be like, oh, I get it now. Okay,
yeah.
That makes sense. Or kind of stepping down from that pedestal of like not understanding to at least empathizing.
Yeah.
It's all I want. Just care for one another.
Yeah, always err on the side of compassion and you mm-hmm. really can't go wrong.
Yeah.
Because then even if you're, you know, not really being the best ally, if you're at least making some kind of an effort, it's more than nothing.
Yeah.
I think things would be better if people would make more of an effort. Like I remember yeah. my mom one time saying something that struck me as odd coming from her.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a few years ago people decided that transgender people using bathrooms was a political stance. And
Jesus.
I mean, I thought I knew where everybody in my family was going to land on that. And my mom actually surprised me by saying, I don't understand why this is even a thing. It's a bathroom.
Exactly.
People are just in there to go to the bathroom.
Exactly.
I was like, All right, Ma, that's one.
1 point for Mom.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I wish you'd get a lot of other things that right, but you know, you got this one.
Yep.
So good. Now, apply that
to everything else.
If only.
Yep.
But it is getting better out there, but with every large change that's happening, agitation always happens.
Yes.
And I wonder if we're experiencing a large, violent death throw of the old way of life, or if it's a rally of the old ways, and
maybe both.
Yeah.
Depends on who you're talking to.
Things are certainly agitated, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's gotten rough out there for a
agitated
lot of people.
Agitated is an understatement.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're not making lemonade. I mean, it's definitely interesting. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of things progressing,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of things getting better. The trouble is, to your point, people being argued with on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably not going to see any kind of change through that. But that doesn't necessarily mean that no change is going to happen.
Well, that's not necessarily the point either.
Yeah.
Because when you argue with people on the internet, and people constantly say this, like, oh, you'll argue with them, but you'll never change their mind.
Yeah.
No, and I probably won't in that moment, and I recognize that.
Yeah.
But I've planted a seed. I've planted a seed in the back of their mind that... because I've angered them enough that'll probably be stored somewhere.
Yeah.
And it'll come up later in their life, and they'll probably be angry at it then, and then they'll be angry at it the next time, and the next time, and the next time, and then they go, hey, wait a second. This happens a lot.
Yeah.
Why am I so angry about this? There must be something about this that I don't quite understand. That's what I'm, like, trying to get at, is just planting that seed so when they start to notice that pattern, eventually, hopefully... starts to make them think a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't, and I talk to people about, I met a guy once at a party, and we got in this big political discussion pretty much all night, and he was very, very upset with me.
Yeah.
And I was just very cool and just kind of playing devil's advocate the whole time. And I told him this. I was like, well, I'm never going to see you again. So if I anger you, I really don't care. It's not my problem. That's your problem to deal with. I'm going to leave and I'm going to be just fine.
Yeah.
I'm just hoping that from this, maybe eventually something personal in your life will happen where this relates.
Yeah.
And you can start to be like, oh, you know what? Somebody was talking to me about that. And then somebody else brought it. And then I also saw it later in this article that I was reading. And then I met this person that also had a very similar thing. Oh, connect, connect, connect. And
yeah.
Put those dots together. I'm hoping... that I could be one of those dots. But I also recognize that's probably not going to happen for 99% of the people that I talk to.
It's not. But the thing that I've discovered in all of this is that the area that we need to focus on, mostly on new people, because mm-hmm. let's be honest, the longer a person is a person, the less likely they are to be willing to change anything.
No.
No?
I disagree with that. So you're saying, just to clarify, the older they are, the less they are to change.
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's bullshit. I think that's an excuse for older people to not evolve.
Right.
Like, we're all like Pokemon.
Oh, I'm not saying they shouldn't.
Yeah. But like we should be constantly evolving. We should be constantly being educated. If you
yes.
hit a point at a certain age where you're like, I'm too old. I'm too set my way as I can't. No.
Yeah.
You're lying. There's so many people that are like hundreds of years old that get it.
Yeah.
And then there's people that are like 40 that are like, I'm too old. And I'm
but
like,
I
well.
But I don't think they got it at 70 is what I'm saying.
Possibly.
I think that most often they kind of get it as they go along. The real damage is done when people are not given the opportunity to be wrong,
mm-hmm.
and you tell them, you know, it's okay if you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But you, once you know you're wrong, you have a responsibility to fix that.
Yes.
People... But it's okay that you were wrong, but be better now.
Well, and also constantly keep yourself educated. Don't ever stop learning. Don't ever stop asking those questions. Don't ever stop. Just accept, like, oh, this is just the way I am.
Yeah.
Me is a great example of, I can be talking about a lot of these subjects and I still don't know jack shit. I am constantly learning, constantly evolving, and that's how we all should be. We should be constantly reading, staying updated with current events, staying updated with historic events, connecting those, educating ourselves, because I think that's one thing in our country that is the problem.
Yeah.
Is people not staying educated when we literally have everything we need in our back pocket.
Yes.
The whole world is right here in this phone, and nobody's taking the time to read it. But then there's the argument of, well, is everything I read going to be factual? That's for you to try to decipher.
Yeah.
And that's the hard part of it. But if you do enough research and you keep looking and you're constantly evolving, you'll start to recognize the patterns of truth and the patterns of not the truth.
Honestly, all of that. People say that it sounds very hard, and and I know how daunting it all seems, but like any other learned skill, it's quite easy once you know what you're looking for.
Being able
to cite your sources, being able to track things back to, you know, if something seems off and you want to fact check it and make sure, you know, that doesn't seem all that right. There are ways to go about that, and once you know those ways, you always know them. And so it gets easier and easier to find the right information.
Yeah. And what I do is I like subscribe to things that I know are factual. So they come up, they come to me rather than me searching them out. And so I'll subscribe to different email newsletters, Facebook pages, Facebook groups, Instagram pages, Twitter pages. I'll subscribe or follow or like all of those things so they come up in my daily life. And I'm constantly seeing it, constantly being educated on it. And to be honest, I'm not following enough still.
Yeah.
You never will. There's constant things that are happening in the world. And also, another thing that I think is very important that I've just recently started doing is creating friends in different countries.
Yes.
Because especially in our current political climate, you can't really trust a lot of the things that you see in our media.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to events outside of the U.S., because the U.S. tends to be very selfish and only really thinks about themselves.
Yeah.
So if you're friends with people in different countries, not only do they kind of help you stay educated about the U.S. that we don't see, but they do.
Yeah.
But we also learn about things that are also happening in the country that are either similar to our situation, fueling our situation, or fueling their situation. For example, I have a friend in Germany who was talking about how since the Trump administration started that there is alt-right, their version of alt-right groups happening in Germany.
Yeah.
Which is terrifying for anybody in Germany, because they've been there.
Far-right politics in Germany. What could go wrong?
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, in Germany, it's outlawed to do anything that is related to Nazi. So they're going by different things. Therefore, it's not outlawed. So it's very interesting to see how the U.S. specifically plays a huge role in all the other countries. And how the other countries view us as well is very interesting and totally understandable. Because, like I said, my friend in Germany is like, yeah, y'all are pretty much idiots. Like, he thinks we're all just really stupid. And he was, like, very impressed that I was having a conversation with him and using the term y'all in the same sentence. Because that usually, for them at least, comes as stupid American.
Yeah.
And that's something that I'm trying to get him off of his pedestal of, is not stereotyping all of us. It's like, hey, we all pretty much hate Trump.
Yeah. It gets difficult, though. It gets difficult to not put people in boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how
we know
them.
That's what we do as
them.
Humans.
Yeah.
Is we stereotype and we label and we put people in boxes to help organize ourselves. And that's
right.
something we need to uncondition.
Right. But what is the next level of that evolution? It's difficult.
Over-labeling.
Yeah.
We must over-label to not label.
No, I think you're probably right. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with categorizing.
I think it's important. So something that is very important is recognizing where you stand. For example, with mental illness, being like, I have this, 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 and this. And understanding that so you know how to take care of it, but also not letting that define you as a person.
Sure.
Not letting that be your identifier and your labels, but understanding that that's the categories that you fit in to help better yourself, but not going around being like, hi, this is me, I have all of this. You need to understand that that other person has completely different things, and they're not going to cater their lives to you or around the certain things that bother you, and you're probably not going to do that for them to an extent.
Yeah.
To an extent, for sure. There's definitely just common courtesy and just being a nice person and recognizing, like, hey, for example, like, one of my, like, triggers is the Joker. People don't bring the Joker things around to me.
Yeah.
As just kindness. But then there's other things that it's like, I don't go around also being like, oh, well, I have multiple personalities, so you need to understand that if I act like a different person and I mean to you, that it's not my problem. You have to deal with that.
Right.
Yeah.
After a certain point, you have to take ownership of things that you know about yourself.
There's things that other people should know about you to be aware of, but then there's other things that you need to be able to control and maintain yourself that other people shouldn't have to pay attention to.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It does.
Yeah.
Do you have the ability to shift your masks at will, or do they shift you?
They mostly shift me, but that's something that I'm working on. The only time I've been able to allow, say, Stephanie to come forward is for shows.
Right.
Because that's the one time, but only on stage.
Yeah.
Because that will happen a lot where I go on stage and I let Stephanie out and she does her thing, and I get off stage and I go back to me being like, really socially awkward and like, hi, well, thanks so much for coming to my show. Here's a free sticker. And they're like, whoa, this is like night and day. Over there, you were screaming in my face. And now you're like worried that you're going to step on my shoes. So like, that's the only time I've been able to really allow one of my personalities out. But most of the time, they take over, especially in times of survival or sadness or anger.
Sure.
You know, any of those extreme emotions to either protect me or to get me out of that situation.
Yeah.
Or to take me away from it to prevent further trauma.
Yeah.
And they just kind of take over and take the hit for me. I have not figured that out yet. That's something I'm currently working on, is trying to communicate with them. I have another friend who has a very, very similar situation to me. And what she said is, imagine that you're in a common room. And that's where I am. And my other personalities have their own bedrooms with their doors closed. And sometimes they can open it and they're there and they can talk to you in the common room. And they have access to all your thoughts. But you can't go in their room. And you can't talk to them. You can't address them. You can't open their door. And you can't see their thoughts. So, and that's a lot of, that helped me be like, oh, that makes so much sense. That's exactly how I am, because I don't know anything about Stephanie, but Stephanie knows everything about me.
Yeah.
So what she suggested to me is put up a bulletin board in your mind, in that common space, put up a bulletin board, and if you ever have questions or anything for them or you're trying to communicate with them, you know, mentally put up a little note and say, hey, here's my question, or here's what's going on. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
And just wait, and eventually it'll come out. The only time that I've had communication was actually a month or so ago with Stephanie. Before, I used to call Stephanie Amante, because that's a name that I used to go by a long time ago. A name, not that people called me, I was just my Facebook name for a while.
Yeah.
Because I was very edgy teenager. And so I just named her Amante. I was like, whatever, that's your name. And she basically opened her door one day and just screamed at me, stop calling me Amante, my name's not Amante, my name's Stephanie. And then slammed the door in my face. And that's the only contact that I've made so far. And I'm like, okay, noted. Got it. Message received. So I've recently been trying to like reconnect again. And that's why it's like putting up that bulletin board in your mind of like, all right, what else do I need to know? Like, my other personality is Lola, but I named her Lola because that's a nickname of mine. Lola isn't actually my legal name. But I'm realizing, like, oh, I gave her that name. She's 5 years old. She's a little 5 year old little blonde girl. I think she's basically just 5 year old me,
yeah,
without the heart disease. She just likes to color and hang out. Like, she's five, so she does, yeah, 5 year old things. She's very shy, and she usually just kind of stays in her own room. But I've put up on my bulletin board right now, you know, hi, Lola, I realize I gave you that name. What would you like to be called? And kind of allowing her to name herself. Now, because she's shy and stays in her room all day and doesn't really come out too much, that's going to probably take a while to kind of get from her.
Yeah.
Or maybe never. Maybe she doesn't want a name. Maybe she doesn't have a name. And that's fine.
Yeah.
But referencing her as Lola doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like her name. But I don't know if she's ever going to reveal that to me. Hmm. So that's something that it's like currently is going on in my brain, is just making that connection with them.
Yeah.
And trying to understand them more so we can maybe trade off or be like, all right, for like example with Stephanie, all right, this is your creative spaces, music and being in a punk band and yelling at men all day. Mm-hmm. That's your creative space. We need to find Lola's creative space. And if there is anybody else in there, what's your role?
Yeah.
I think a lot of them have been pushed back in my mind if they are there, because I depended a lot on the relationships that I was in to deal with them for me. And I'm recently learning how to deal with all of them by myself.
Yeah.
Which is a struggle. And I'm very blessed, because the last relationship that I was in was a 3-year relationship. The lovely man, and he was fantastic. And he was able to deal with Lola and Stephanie and understanding their quirks and how they worked and how to calm them down and kind of push them back and bring me back out. He was very great with that.
Yeah.
But I never learned how to do it myself. And that's something that I'm like determined now. It's something that I should know as an independent person. It's like, this is something that I should be able to handle by myself. I shouldn't have to, when I'm having an episode, call and be like, help me.
Have you seen anybody about any of this?
I have. Unfortunately, I'm not financially, nor do I have time to see a therapist consistently, but I have on and off throughout growing up.
Yeah.
From middle school on, I've been on and off with therapists. Some great, some horrible.
Yeah.
Made it worse.
Yeah.
So finding that sweet spot has been very hard. And then also bouncing through different medical providers and insurances, and it's, yeah, like, oh, I'm not covered with this person anymore. I guess I won't go to therapy anymore. So it's something that I would like to get back to, especially now that I'm like discovering it more and more every day and really, yeah, focusing on it myself. But finding the time and the money has been quite the struggle, but that's just millennial life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds like you've got a number of tools, mm-hmm, that you've picked up along the, mm-hmm, way, because you certainly talk about this like someone who knows what the fuck they're talking about.
Hopefully. I feel like in a month I'll be like, well, that was wrong.
And that's all right. It's
constantly
okay to be wrong.
Evolving.
Yes, exactly. That I think that one of the ways you could look at all of this, you had mentioned very early in the conversation about not being completely certain which one of these personalities, mm-hmm, really is you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they all are, is, mm-hmm, the obvious answer, but the idea isn't to strip the masks away and, mm-hmm, find the person underneath. I think the idea is probably to assimilate those masks.
Work with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because they all are a part of you, mm-hmm, and serving a purpose. The trick is discovering which bits and pieces are helping you, mm-hmm, and which are hindering you.
That's tough.
Yeah.
That's going to be hard. But I agree. I think that's very accurate. Yeah.
Well, I really enjoyed talking to you, and this has been amazing. We're going to have to follow up. Maybe we'll get one of the others on the show.
That would be awesome.
All right. Thanks for talking to me.
Thank you so much.
Well, I'm feeling a little vulnerable. How about you? That was a really great conversation, and they were a really great person to have a conversation with, and we definitely will follow up at some point. If you want to find out more, you can go check out the new EP, Castration Station, from Rotten Reputation, or go to patreon.com/cherrylolacola and get yourself some pictures. It's always worthwhile to support the people who are doing things out there that you love. So please go out and support your fellow artists and go get some stuff. As for next week, we head into a new set of 10s on the show. And I'm going to just try and hold it down. Don't kill yourselves out there.